It was a brand new model called the Boeing 737 MAX 8.
They didn't understand the danger that they were walking into.
Pull up. Pull up.
Had flown into the sea, you know, at full speed.
The passengers would, of course, been hysterical. Computers, laptops, phones would have been flying around.
You can tell how violent that impact was.
People shouldn't innocently buy an airplane ticket and then be in a flying coffin.
Boeing had installed a flight control system on the 737 MAX that had the power to take control of the plane from the pilots without them even knowing about it.
They're turning the pages to find out what the hell it is.
It was given the power to try to kill them, essentially, until it finally succeeded.
Will passengers be willing to fly again on its troubled MAX plane?
346 people died. Can you answer a few questions here about that?
A sunny March morning in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, a truly remarkable group of passengers converged on Bole International Airport. 149 passengers from 35 different countries around the world got ready to board Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, heading off to Nairobi.
It was seemingly just packed with people who were on goodwill missions of various kinds. There was a big environmental conference happening in Nairobi, a UN environmental conference.
Amongst the 149 passengers were also nine Ethiopians, and one of them was Tamru Mulu, who is a child protection advocate.
He was a kind of person who's really passionate about life, especially children who are suffering from conflict, drought.
Also on that Ethiopian Airlines flight were eight Americans, including 24-year-old Samia Stumo, who was raised on a Massachusetts farm by a family with a very strong tradition of activism. Samia had just started work for ThinkWell, which is a global healthcare organization.
This was her first assignment. She is going to East Africa. She, at 24, had impressed them that they sent her instead of someone, you know, a dozen years her senior.
But not everyone on that flight was on a goodwill mission. There were also two brothers from California, Melvin and Bennett Riffle, on one last adventure together because Melvin was about to become a new father.
Tell me how big this was for these two brothers to do this together. That was pretty remarkable.
I thought so. I mean,
No, I think so, too. Yeah. I think it's rare that two brothers their age would stay close enough to want to travel with each other like that.
Also on Ethiopian Air 302 that morning, a young Russian couple on vacation, Alexander Polyakov and his wife, Ekaterina.
Они очень любили путешествовать. У них мечта была сразу. Но они перво-наперво, как они хотели именно поехать в этот национальный парк в Кению, чтобы увидеть крупных кошек.
And as they got ready to board, Ekaterina posted this cell phone video on Instagram of their plane outside that was waiting for them.
You know, in general, very few people think much about the model of the plane that they're on. You know, it's something that most people really don't think twice about.
In fact, it was a brand new model welcomed into the Ethiopian Airlines fleet with a lot of ceremony just months earlier, called the Boeing 737 MAX 8.
We are welcoming the state-of-the-art modern airplane, the 737 MAX 8.
It was a groundbreaking move for Ethiopian Airlines to acquire this aircraft. The fact that it was new, the fact that it uses the latest technology.
Boeing had had a track record of success, and you know, all expectations at the time were that the Max would just be, you know, the next big thing for the company.
But it turns out this brand new plane had a secret, unknown even to the pilots. And when it was revealed, it would not just impact Boeing in shocking and unforeseen ways, but the entire air traveling community worldwide.
Boeing is an iconic American company. They're known as the king of the sky. This is a company that's at the heart of American engineering and American manufacturing.
For Captain Sully, celebrated for successfully landing his crippled plane on New York's Hudson River, Boeing has long been the gold standard for passenger aircraft.
Boeing had a century-long history of engineering excellence, an effective culture, good leadership.
There's a saying, and it stands today, if it ain't Boeing, I ain't going. It's affirmation that Boeing has had our back for decades.
This is the 707, Boeing's prototype jet airliner, capable of speeds and altitudes which will revolutionize commercial air travel.
The 707 launches in 1958, and right off the bat, it is a huge success for Boeing. And it just so happens to be the same year that Frank Sinatra releases Come Fly With Me.
Come fly with me.
It speaks to generations of people for whom getting on an airplane was something very special. And it was exotic, and it was desirable, and it was glamorous.
Air travel became sort of the vogue.
People would dress up to travel. Meals and flights were not a joke. You know, something that people might look forward to.
The 1960s were an extraordinary period for the company because of the 7 series of planes.
707 was the first successful jet. After that, Boeing just started building more and more, and the 727 came, the 737 came.
And then they would do the 747, the so-called Queen of the Sky, the first jumbo jet. Boeing, from that point forward, was the premier maker of passenger aircraft.
By the 1980s, Boeing is unmatched in terms of its power, its reach, and those 700s planes are it.
I mean, the company was so important to our country's economy, you know, in part because it was the largest exporter in the world.
I mean, they manufacture Air Force One. I don't think you can get kind of any bigger than that.
But by the 1990s, Boeing started to face truly stiff competition from this European consortium called Airbus. But up until that point, Boeing hadn't really taken them all that seriously. But suddenly, they're up and coming.
They've really accelerated to become the only other, at this point, major global competitor to Boeing for commercial aircraft.
In late 2010, Airbus comes out with this new model that really shakes up the industry and puts serious pressure on Boeing to innovate.
The A320neo, a single-aisle aircraft that had new, more fuel-efficient engines that could fly farther and for cheaper.
People want to fly direct, and to do that, you need smaller, more efficient planes.
Boeing was focused on the wide-body world. Airbus beat them to the chase.
The A320neo, damned if they didn't wind up becoming their fastest-selling airliner. And then Boeing's like, well, wait, what are we going to do?
Boeing comes up with what they think is this really smart plan. Instead of developing an entirely new plane to catch up with Airbus, they decide to take a shortcut and revamp a model that's already on the market, saving them a lot of extra time and money.
That's when they said, okay, we can take another look at the next iteration of 737.
There were new engines, larger, more fuel-efficient engines being added to this aircraft.
Boeing calls this new model the 737 MAX, and they promise they're going to fly more people, it'll cost less money, use less fuel, and cost a lot less to operate.
United Airlines says it has cut a new deal with Boeing to build 150 737s for its fleet over the next 10 years, giving the aircraft manufacturer a leg up against its main competitor, Airbus.
The Boeing 737 MAX was the fastest-selling airliner in Boeing history. Another ball out of the park for Boeing commercial aircraft.
You've got United and American and Southwest all lining up to buy it, along with 70 other buyers around the world.
One of the big customers early on was a young budget carrier in Indonesia called Lion Air. It was a huge deal.
Tonight's Money Matters, Boeing has finalized its biggest sale ever, a $22 billion order from Lion Air of Indonesia.
The 737 MAX 8 had been flying for 17 months without any incident, but then in October of 2018, suddenly, out of the blue, an alarming problem developed with one of Lion Air's brand new MAX planes.
They don't realize that there's something in it that could potentially be hazardous and something that pilots and co-pilots are not familiar with.
All of us are screaming like we are in a roller coaster. To be honest, I think this is my last flight and this is my last day.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The capital, the largest city in Indonesia, and it's a bustling metropolitan with around 10 million residents. The aviation industry was booming, especially with the increase of the middle class in Indonesia.
One of the airlines that benefited from that boom in air travel is Lion Air, an aggressive, rapidly growing budget Indonesian air carrier. In 2011, Lion Air made a huge splash buying more than 200 of Boeing 737 MAX 8 planes.
Even the signing was overseen by then U.S. President Barack Obama.
So I want to congratulate Lion Air for their incredible success.
One of the Lion Air pilots chosen to fly the new 737 MAX was 31-year-old Bhavya Saneja. He's an Indian national whose dreams of being a pilot started when he was just a child.
So can you tell me about your son?
Yes, Bob. My son was a gifted child, a blessed child. I was into aviation and for an aviator, when the child is flying and he becomes a commander, it is a big thing, you know, it is the sort of pinnacle of your dreams.
Even though her son had over 6,000 hours of flight experience, Sangeeta says she was really concerned after learning that he wouldn't be going through pilot simulator training for the MAX.
And I said, you haven't had a simulator training. How can you go for a MAX? And it is a more powerful engine. So without a simulator, how will you manage?
One of the core selling points for Boeing of the 737 MAX was you don't need pilot training in a simulator.
They were selling this to airlines as essentially just another 737 that the airline pilots could fly without learning all that much new.
It's a huge deal to have simulator training for pilots for any airline. It costs money and time. It takes the pilot off of the line and flying passengers around.
Lion Air had asked Boeing about simulator training for their pilots, and Boeing dissuaded them from this.
Now, according to internal Boeing documents, one of their employees ridiculed the request in a message to a colleague saying, now, Lion Air might need a sim to fly the MAX, and maybe because of their own stupidity, I'm scrambling, trying to figure out how to unscrew this now. Idiots.
Well, they were mocking them because if Lion Air required simulator training, then other airlines would say, well, wait a minute. If they're requiring it, maybe we need it, then the whole house of cards would start to fall apart.
He said, Mom, I've been given ground training. They have given me a training on iPad. I said, what, an iPad?
So he would sit down with an iPad course, and I think there were three or four parts, and it went through a robotic voice describing what the MAX is about.
The 737 MAX has a 69-inch fan.
Did you see anything in it that looks, wow, that's substantial, we should probably do more training?
It seemed to be enough.
He trusted Boeing blindly, and that trust, you know, gave him immense confidence. He was empowered.
In October of 2018, Lion Air had a handful of the new 737 MAXs in its fleet. And one of the aircraft was going to be departing from Bali with the crew and passengers.
Me and my colleague in office, we went to Bali about October 2018. Bali is amazing for holiday, especially in Asia.
Lion Air flight JT043 was scheduled to take off from Bali to Jakarta.
The flight was quite full of passengers, and most of them are local or domestic tourists like me. It's around 7 or 10 minutes after the takeoff, the flight suddenly feels like a fall down.
It was a dive, a steep drop, 200 feet, and it wasn't something that was just caused by turbulence.
All of us are screaming like we are in a roller coaster.
How many times did it go up and down?
Up and down four times.
Four times?
Yes, the flight attendant who was sitting in the back, they could feel it up and down in extreme way.
When an aircraft is pitching aggressively downward like this aircraft was, and it may feel as if your stomach is coming up into your throat, basically, but then comes the positive G's. It'll squash you down into your seat.
To be honest, I think it almost this is my last flight and this is my last day.
It just so happened there was a third pilot traveling on the plane, and he steps in and helps them get control of the situation.
Until it's landed to the airport, I can hear everyone so relieved. Some of the passengers are Muslim. I can hear that say, Alhamdulillah, thanks God. I cannot say it in a word. It's really a relief. I still feel a little bit shaky until now about it.
The pilots were able to control it. They knew they had a problem, but they didn't understand exactly what the nature of the problem was.
After the flight successfully landed in Jakarta, the pilots logged that they'd had some issues, but they left a lot of gaps in understanding what had happened on that flight.
That left the next crew in the dark about potential problems with the aircraft.
The very next day, Captain Sunesia is assigned to an early morning flight out of Jakarta on that same 737 MAX, but he was given an incomplete report about what happened to that plane the previous night.
These are two different flights, but the same exact plane, so it's something that spells disaster.
Of October 29th, 2018, at the airport in Jakarta, the capital of Indonesia, Lion Air Flight 610 was getting ready to take off. Its destination was the city of Pangkal Pinang, which is located on the Indonesian island of Bangka.
There was 189 people on board, 181 passengers, two pilots, and six crew members.
One of the passengers was Miss Fiona Ayuzen. She was a businesswoman, 29 years old. She was flying back to Bangka for work.
Bawain kopi ya, Pa. Gitu. Karena saya suka kopi Bangka.
Pas pulang ke rumah, Mama bilang, sekolah yang benar, terus dikasih uang jajan. Terus kalau besok paginya, udah nggak ngeliat, soalnya udah berangkat duluan mamanya.
There was also another passenger by the name of Fendi Cristanto. He was flying to Bangka on a business trip and also on a personal trip. His father just passed away.
Karena dia mau mengikuti sembahyang bersama dengan keluarganya untuk sembahyang orang tuanya. Pulang mau ngikutin sembahyang yang ke-21 hari.
One of the passengers shot some videos they were boarding the flight. No one on board, including the pilots, had any idea that this very same plane suffered a near catastrophe in the air just the previous day. And on that video, you can see the brand new 737 MAX out the window.
Lion Air Flight 610 on that same 737 MAX is taking off from Jakarta. Very shortly after the flight takes off, you know, the pilots are struggling with the plane.
The stick shaker pops off. It is loud and it is rattling in the captain's hands. There are a cacophony, a tidal wave of other distracting alerts. Airspeed disagree, altitude disagree.
Hold up, hold up.
Just 10 minutes later, around 6:30 in the morning, a tugboat captain was out on the Java Sea, just east of Jakarta.
Saya merasa merasakan ada sesuatu benda yang jatuh. Nah, di situ dalam hitungan detik terdengar dentuman cukup keras.
Apa itu?
Jadi saya menghubungi Jakarta Radio.
Iya, disapa.
Itu telah terjadi, pesawat jatuh.
The crash site, it is about 25 miles from Jakarta Seaport. On my way to the crash site, really, I pray to God. I had great expectation that somebody, everybody still alive. Arriving on scene, when I saw the debris, the small pieces of your fuselage, I lost my hope.
Kalau di dalam, kebanyakan itu hampir sama dengan yang ada di permukaan, karena yang ada di dasar laut, di kedalaman itu adalah potongan-potongan tubuh ataupun bagian-bagian pesawat, entah itu serpihan, kursi.
Presiden Direktur Lion Air Edward.
When news of the crash broke, I immediately flew in from Beijing, where I was based at the time. So the sun has just gone down, and you can see all the police officers along this dock. After arriving in Jakarta, our team headed out straight to the docks where the wreckage from the plane was being brought in. Whether it crashed or what happened, we still don't even know. But these crews have been pulling up and carrying out debris piece by piece. By the next day, the family members of the passengers were gathering and anxiously really waiting for word on whether their loved ones had survived the crash. Among the family members that I got the chance to talk to was the wife of that passenger who took that video of himself boarding onto the Lion airplane just minutes before it crashed.
Your husband actually was taking video of the others getting on the plane when he got on?
Yeah.
Yes. Can you show that to us? These are a lot of the other passengers that were on the plane?
Yeah.
Is there still some hope that there are survivors?
Yeah. We do believe that God still control, and we still have some hope that they can find him alive.
It was clear pretty quickly that the plane had flown into the sea, you know, at full speed and came apart with such force that there was no way anyone could have survived.
Berdoa buat cepat ketemu gitu. Berdoa biar tetap selamat, tapi nggak selamat gitu.
Karena benar-benar saya merasa kehilangan.
Hubungan antara Fiona dengan ibunya ini sangat dekat. Nah, begitu mendengar kecelakaan itu benar-benar down sekali. Benar-benar shock, down. Jadi satu hari setelah pesawat jatuh, mengirim kabar, ibu yang meninggal.
Fendi left behind a wife and four children, the youngest who was 5 years old.
Jujur ya, Bu, suami saya itu kalau naik pesawat itu memang sangat khawatir. Dia itu paling takut kalau naik. Dengan rasa ketakutan yang dia alami gitu loh.
At the time, very little was understood about what might have happened. Brand new plane, nice enough day, nothing in particular that would point to an immediate cause of this accident.
This is a fairly new plane. The 737 MAX, it had only 800 flight hours.
But it turns out there was a hidden danger on that plane. A flight control system that Boeing did not even tell the pilots about.
There was nothing in the manuals that alerted the pilots to the existence of this new system that was placed on the MAX.
Pull up.
It has one mission, and that's to drive the nose down.
Terrain.
And it will not stop.
Pull up.
It was given the power to try to kill them, essentially, until it finally succeeded.
Pull up.
Devastating plane crash in Indonesia.
Lion Air jet with 189 people on board fell into the sea minutes after takeoff, leaving no survivors.
So far, 24 body bags have been delivered. The jet was a new Boeing 737.
I gotta say, my first thoughts were, boy, it's a brand new airplane. It must have been bad maintenance, or it must have been pilot error.
A lot of Indonesians initially just saw that this was Lion Air fall.
ABC's David Curley has the story. Good morning, David.
George, the real thing that we need to find are those two black boxes, which will yield a lot of answers to all these questions.
The National Transport Safety Committee found the flight data recorder on the 1st of November. It was just only 3 days after the crash.
Maybe kita bisa mengerti
as they look at the contents of the flight data recorder, it becomes clear that something had gone terribly wrong. The pilots are struggling with the plane, almost in a tug of war.
When we found the black box, we found that the aircraft was pitching up and then down, down and up and down and up. It's up and down for about 24 times.
Had you ever seen anything quite like this?
I never knew any case of the aircraft can fly up and down and up and down like this. I knew that the pilot was fighting with the aircraft.
It would have been a terrifying roller coaster ride. During that time period, the passengers would have, of course, been hysterical. Things would have been flying in the cabin. Computers, laptops, phones would have been flying around. People would have been screaming.
It was a clear weather, so they could see the sea. And I think it will be very scary for everyone in the cabin to see outside. Feel the speed.
Sepuluh menit atau berapa itu, rasa ketakutannya yang sangat amat.
Saya yakin saat itu dia sangat, sangat takut sekali, Bu, dengan pesawat yang goyang seperti itu. Saya bisa ngerasain juga.
When the cockpit recorder was eventually recovered, it was revealed that pilots were rifling through the pilot manual, trying to apparently figure out what to do.
They're turning the pages to find out what the hell it is, why their ship is going down.
They start shouting about which procedure should do. They knew that they were having serious problems, and they just screamed in the name of God.
That point of time, that only pain he must have felt was the sense of failure, that he's not able to save others, except that he was a brave child, you know.
Be surprised. It's very strange that the aircraft doing that way. Then we ask Boeing what kind of system that may create this way.
What Boeing revealed to investigators came as a complete surprise. It turns out that Boeing had installed a flight control system on the 737 MAX that had the power to take control of the plane from the pilots without them even knowing about it. The program was called MCAS.
MCAS, Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. And that this system, under certain circumstances, can trigger in such a way that it will cause the airplane to nose down.
Why did Boeing put this MCAS system? What was it for? It's a mystery not only for us, but also for the pilot and co-pilot on board the plane.
So the reason they put MCAS on the airplane was because they put these brand new huge engines on an old airframe.
In order to have sufficient ground clearance, they moved the engine further up above the leading edge of the wing and further forward, and that changed the way the airplane flew.
And this effect of the engines came in and the airplane starts to want to pitch up all by itself. The idea was to provide something that would offset that pitching moment or causing the nose to come up.
When the plane computers think the plane is in danger of a stall, so in very basic terms, MCAS pushes the plane's nose down by automatically triggering the rear horizontal stabilizer.
So the MCAS is there to correct what MCAS thinks is wrong.
Right.
The pilots have no idea why this plane is going down against their will,
yes.
So they try to fight it back.
Yes. One of the most fundamental muscle memory things a pilot knows how to do. If the nose goes down too far, you pull it back and you trim. And this battle goes back and forth a couple of dozen times.
So it was MCAS, it was the computer against the pilot.
Yes, and the way MCAS was designed, it was given the control authority to do it as many times as necessary. In other words, it was given the power to try to kill them, essentially, until it finally succeeded.
Boeing's revelations about the MCAS system and what caused it to activate on the Lion Air flight in the first place would cause an uproar in the pilot community, and it would all lead to a secretly taped meeting where Boeing was recorded telling pilots that MCAS was being fixed.
Those are going to be relatively straightforward software changes that we expect to be done in a fairly short period of time. We want to make sure we're fixing the right things.
But while that was happening, the plane would continue to fly.
They were rolling the dice with the lives of the global traveling public.
Now that urgent safety warning from Boeing about their brand new 737 jets after that deadly crash in Indonesia. Now concerns about a feature that could malfunction, causing planes to abruptly dive.
A week after the Lion Air crash, Boeing issued a safety bulletin to the airlines, finally revealing the existence of a flight control system on the 737 MAX that could unexpectedly force the plane's nose down.
It's an admission by the company that there is a potential glitch in its newest aircraft.
Just a few days later, Boeing tells operators for the first time that there's a new and previously undisclosed system on the aircraft, and that is MCAS.
That was a shock. It's not in our manuals at all, except in one section, our abbreviation section. We didn't know what MCAS meant. It meant nothing to us.
But there was another critical question to be answered. What caused MCAS to force the nose of the Lion airplane down in the first place? The plane was flying normally. So why did MCAS activate?
Among a lot of surprises was that MCAS was triggered by a faulty angle of attack indicator, which is a relatively innocuous piece of equipment on the side of the airplane.
The angle of attack sensor was feeding incorrect data about the angle of the plane's nose.
It was telling the plane that it was, you know, approaching a stall situation, that its nose was pitched up.
So the plane thought that the nose was angled too high, when in fact it wasn't.
And that MCAS needed to come in and push the nose back down.
And there was a further revelation about MCAS that took investigators by complete surprise. Even though there are two angle of attack sensors on the 737 MAX, MCAS only relied on one of them.
It's a lack of redundancy that appears to my mind to be unacceptable in airplane design, because the AOA indicator is susceptible to damage. It's not a robust piece of equipment.
A single point of failure hooked to a safety critical system, you just don't do that. It's crazy.
The bottom line here is the 737 MAX is safe, and the safety is a core value for us at Boeing.
Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg went on Fox Business to reassure the public that a bulletin had been sent to all the airlines instructing pilots exactly what to do if there was another emergency situation involving the 737 MAX.
We've already issued a couple of additional bulletins that point them back to existing flight procedures to handle that kind of condition.
So Boeing is telling the pilots that one of their options is to simply turn off the power supply to the electric motor on the stabilizer. That's the, you know, the piece that pivots up and down and controls the nose of the aircraft.
Boeing pointed out that the pilots on that previous Lion Air flight who overcame a mid-air emergency involving MCAS had followed the appropriate procedure by turning off power to the stabilizer. That was a step the pilots on the fatal flight did not take.
That was perceived to be an indirect way of blaming the airline and blaming the pilots without also acknowledging design shortcomings of the system.
It emotionally tore me apart, as if I was blamed for him being the pilot. I was blamed for killing all the people, mothering a son who could not take care of his passengers.
Pilots were furious. Pilot unions asked Boeing, why didn't you tell us if you put something on the airplane that's going to actually interfere with my job? Late November, you know, about a month after the accident, you know, four Boeing executives traveled to the headquarters of the Allied Pilots Association, the union that represents pilots at American Airlines.
That meeting was secretly recorded by the head of the pilots union.
Our president at the time wanted to make sure we knew exactly what was said.
We flat out deserve to know what is on our airplanes.
I don't disagree.
I don't know that understanding this system would have changed the outcome of this. We try not to overload the crews with information that's unnecessary so they actually know the information that we believe is important.
It enraged us. Boeing always gives you the information. They don't parcel it out.
We're working with the FAA right now to try to figure out what software changes we might make to mitigate the failure conditions that we experienced at Lion Air.
They said, well, we're going to correct the software, all the things that you brought up.
Those are going to be relatively straightforward software changes that we expect we can get out in a fairly short period of time, weeks, not a year, but a couple, maybe 6 weeks-ish.
The question I have for you is, do you feel comfortable that the situation is under control today before any software fixes are
Absolutely.
Implemented?
Absolutely.
They were taking a gamble with keeping that in the air. They had such a big bet on the 737 MAX. They had staked their reputation. They had staked their financial future on it.
4 months after that Lion Air crash, the 737 MAX is still flying all over the world. Meanwhile, 149 people are saying their goodbyes as they prepare to board that Ethiopian Airlines flight to Kenya. Among them, young Samya Stumo, who had just flown in from D.C. and was transiting to Nairobi for assignment with her global health care organization.
I guess she had landed in Ethiopia, and I said, safe travels, with a bunch of exclamation points, and she said, thanks, boo.
We didn't know that there was an issue with the plane. We thought that the problem that happened in Indonesia was because of a problem with that airlines or the pilots or maintenance or something.
Because the Lion Air crash happened in the other side of the world, maybe they didn't understand the danger that they were walking into.
Samya, Samya, where are you? Where are you, Samya?
Boeing killed my daughter. We're not afraid of anybody.
The bottom line here is the 737 MAX is safe.
Pull up.
We flat out deserve to know what is on our airplane.
The nose is pointing down and it's over.
Boeing 737 MAX 8 crashing to Earth just 6 minutes after takeoff.
Not a plane there. There was a hole in the ground.
The pilots have no idea why this plane is going down against their will.
Pilots were furious. Why didn't you tell us if you put something on the airplane that's going to actually interfere with my job?
What really shocks me is their greed. How they have the audacity to do what they're doing.
You're not the person anymore to solve the situation.
Should go to jail.
The Berkshires are in western Massachusetts, at the very far western end of the state, right up against the New York state line. The Stumos live in a town called Sheffield, and it's an absolutely lovely spot. It's quite a large farm, and it has this unbelievable view of the mountain range just to the west.
You can see the lower field is a cornfield.
How much land is there here?
180 acres.
Nadia Milleron and her husband, Michael Stumo, moved to this farm after a career as attorneys and advocates in Winsted, Connecticut. That's also the home of the brother of Nadia's mom, perhaps the most famous consumer rights activist in American history.
The standard can be considered so inadequate that it is deemed illegal for the consumer interest.
Nadia's uncle is Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader became famous through his activism in Washington and his whole war on auto safety and all the rest.
I think he's had a big influence in both of our lives in terms of trying to make better things happen.
Nadia and Michael had three sons and one daughter who they named Samuel.
She was a force of nature. She was just, she was... You know, beautiful, intelligent, charismatic. She could just light up a room. But around here, you know, she raised pigs. She would sell the meat to the neighbors. If she decided you needed to buy her pork, you were going to buy her pork.
Samia very much absorbed the family ethic, that you were supposed to use your time well. You develop your skills. She became very good at her instrument, which for her was cello. Watching Samia, you got the sense of someone who had really kind of brought together all these strains in the family, starting with Uncle Ralph in his activism, and then through her own parents.
Definitely, he influenced Samia tremendously because she was out there at 9 years old campaigning for his presidential campaign. They made her cry. You know, your mother shouldn't allow you to be out here, and Ralph Nader is spoiling the election. And she understood the issues, and she talked right back at them.
She had leadership written all over her. She had compassion in an intellectually rigorous way. Everybody loved her.
One pivotal moment in young Samia's life that fueled her drive to change the world was the tragic childhood death of her brother, Nels.
He was diagnosed with cancer at 15, 16 months of age, and he ended up not making it. He died at a little over 2 years old. We actually, we only have one picture with him. With all four kids.
Did she ever tell you that part of her motivation and dream to get into medicine was because of what happened to Nels?
Yeah, she did. She believed that, you know, her calling was healthcare, and I think that was partially a result of her exposure to her brother's illness.
Samia went to the University of Massachusetts and then managed to get a full-ride scholarship for the public health master's program at the University of Copenhagen.
Everybody liked her, but she was very firm in her beliefs. It would really kind of force you to think about what you said, think about what you believe, and defend it.
When I met Samia, I was like really shy to like talk to people. We just would go on these fun adventures. It just helped me be more fearless.
She had this knack of making you feel as fascinating as she was.
In January of 2019, Samia had landed a dream job in Washington, D.C. with a global public health organization called ThinkWell.
Just a few months into her new job at ThinkWell, Samia gets her first assignment to go overseas. They were going to send her over to East Africa in March of 2019, where she was going to help set up some new offices.
This is the kind of thing that a relatively seasoned person is usually put into, and someone like Samia, without much experience in this, we were just so blown away by her that we felt that she had the acumen to be able to figure this out.
As Samia got ready for her Africa trip, perhaps the last thing on her mind was the tragic crash in Indonesia just a few months earlier of a Boeing 737 MAX plane, killing everyone on board.
And now we're going to turn to that chilling report about the Lion Air crash. From the moment the flight took off, pilots fought a tug-of-war with an automated system that repeatedly pushed the jet's nose down.
After the crash, concerns had been raised about a new flight control system Boeing had installed on the plane called MCAS.
Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. This system, under certain circumstances, can trigger in such a way that it will cause the airplane to nose down, independent of the pilot's judgment.
It turns out there was a defective sensor on that Lion airplane that accidentally triggered MCAS to activate and caused the plane to repeatedly go into a dive before it finally crashed.
After Lion Air, there was not a lot of urgency. I think it was sort of easy to dismiss it as a one-off. I would say it pretty quickly faded from view for the majority of the traveling public.
On March 10th, 2019, Samia left D.C. for Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where she would be transferring to another plane on her way to her assignment in Kenya.
So there's 149 travelers from around the world, and they're about to get on the newest Boeing airliner, the 737 MAX. They have no idea of the danger.
On March 10th, 2019, Samia Stumo had just arrived in the Ethiopian Tababa after a long flight from Washington, D.C.
When I woke up, I just looked at the message, and it said, 2 more hours to Nairobi.
There were 149 passengers on that flight from 35 countries, most of them heading to Nairobi for a UN conference.
Also, at Gate 12 in Terminal 2, those two brothers from California, Melvin and Bennett Riffle, who were enjoying a globe-trotting jaunt together before the birth of Melvin's daughter.
When we said goodbye, he gave me a kiss and gave me a kiss on the stomach for Emma. You know, and he was all excited but nervous.
There were also this young Russian couple who posted a video on Instagram showing the 737 MAX, a brand new aircraft.
Unlike the pilots involved in that Indonesian crash, the Ethiopian Airlines pilots knew about Boeing's MCAS flight control system. And Boeing had actually sent a directive to airlines instructing pilots what to do if a plane went into a sudden dive on its own.
So Boeing is telling the pilots to turn off the power supply to the electric motor on the stabilizer. That's the, you know, the piece that pivots up and down and controls the nose of the aircraft.
It was a bright Sunday morning. The plane took off at 8:30. And 3 minutes after takeoff, the aircraft started behaving erratically.
Their instruments start to show different readings.
After 6 minutes later, the plane was spotted again, about 30 miles from Addis in a small town called Bishoftu.
Tashkarakaru Dubani Mboba. Dubani Mboba.
Immediately drive to the Ethiopian Airlines compound. There were family members, people were crying and some of them holding their head, and it was so horrifying to see them.
An hour earlier or something, I talked to him, and it just didn't feel right.
I don't know, I was trying to deny that it happened, or it's true, or somehow he has been spared.
We start in Ethiopia, where around 157 people are feared dead after a plane crashed early on Sunday.
Within, I think it was 2.5 hours or 3 hours, we were on a plane headed to Addis Ababa.
This dirt road takes you to the field where that crash site is.
So finally, after almost 3.5 hours, that we arrive at the crash site, and it's splayed out in the fields. Right next to the debris field, you have the smell of jet fuel intermingled with the smell of death. And you can see those workers picking through everything, trying to ensure that they don't miss any key parts of the plane. The plane came down at such an enormous rate of speed, basically as fast as a cruise missile flies, that it essentially disintegrated into that hole. You can tell how violent that impact was, how shredded these metal components are. But you also have to remember that there is more difficult work here for a lot of these workers here, and that is dealing with the people who are on these planes. And everywhere you go, you see shredded bags and personal effects.
Our breaking news, an Ethiopian Airlines flight has crashed.
With victims from 35 different countries on board, grief resonates all around the world, including in a small seaside town in Russia. In the Northern California town of Redding, a phone rings in the Riffle home.
It was the embassy in Ethiopia. I said, I know why you're calling. Is it both boys? And they said it was.
It's something you can't believe when you hear it. It's just like you're in a nightmare or something, and it's just totally unbelievable.
It's one thing to lose one of your children, and you lost both.
Yeah, lost our family, and we had to help Brittany.
I said, please don't tell me my husband's dead. And Susan said, both of them. And I just collapsed. What do I do now? I'm pregnant, what do I do? Our baby, what do I do now?
And word of the terrible crash also travels to a family farm nestled in the Berkshires in Massachusetts.
I turned on the BBC. It said that a plane had crashed. I remember I couldn't breathe. Then I woke up Michael, and he told me, what are you talking about? That's impossible. That's what he told me.
My sister is not going to die in a plane crash. It doesn't fit into your world. And we thought, oh, well, maybe she survived.
needed to get to Ethiopia right away to help her. We had to be there. And we had to protect her.
We got in the car, and we headed for JFK. Got on the flight, and along the way, along our journey, we learned that there were no survivors because we kept looking at the news.
Like Nadia and Michael, many grief-stricken families made their way to the crash site, desperate to find any trace of their loved ones.
You know, there was not a plane there. There was a hole in the ground.
Anybody able to find the body remains?
There was nothing bigger than a femur bone.
The black box data now in the hands of Ethiopian officials.
As the investigation continued and the cause of the crash, there was a question on many people's minds. Would Boeing 737 MAX plane be implicated in a fatal tragedy again?
The Boeing 737 MAX 8 crashing to Earth just 6 minutes after takeoff in Ethiopia.
First Indonesia, now Ethiopia.
The big question here is, has the same thing happened?
The flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder were recovered the next day, and it didn't take long for investigators to conclude that there were similarities.
The faulty angle of attack sensor triggered the activation of MCAS right after takeoff, and that is almost exactly what happened on the Lion Air aircraft.
What was heard on the cockpit voice recorder, the first officer saying, pitch up, pitch up, pitch up, while the MCAS was kicking and nose-diving the aircraft. It was so difficult for them to keep the aircraft under control.
Despite similarities between the two crashes, this time there was a huge difference. Not only the Ethiopian Airlines pilots knew about MCAS, they also followed Boeing's instruction on how to disable it.
The crew performed all the procedures repeatedly provided by the manufacturer, but was not able to control the aircraft.
This was actually pretty shocking because Boeing had been suggesting that overcoming an erroneous MCAS activation was pretty straightforward. If that was the case, why did this second accident happen?
To better understand why those pilots could not recover control of the plane, we asked two experienced American Airlines pilots and members of the Allied Pilots Association to take us through what might have occurred in that Ethiopian Airlines cockpit based on information from the black boxes. So in here, what will we see?
In this airplane, while it is not a MAX, the displays are very similar. But what's unique about the MAX in this case is the MCAS.
I'll be kind of simulating the MCAS with my electric trim switch to show what the MCAS would be doing.
So now we're going to take off from the capital of Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, heading to Kenya.
Yep.
Shortly after the takeoff, faulty data from the plane's angle of attack sensor triggers a myriad of false alerts in that cockpit.
Seconds after you take off.
Altitude disagree, airspeed disagree.
Grab the stick shaker is shaking continuously very loud. This will not stop throughout the entire flight.
In the middle of all these distractions, MCAS suddenly activates.
MCAS is firing. Starts to push the nose down. I'm pulling back. And then I trim up, get a little bit of trim up on it. And the MCAS kicks in again. The MCAS is more powerful and fast than what the pilot can do. So it'll always win more.
It was at this point that the Ethiopian Airlines pilots followed Boeing's instructions and cut off electronic power to the stabilizer in the plane's tail. So you realize that MCAS is not working.
But the problem now is that the nose is so far down, they're having trouble
holding it back, yeah.
MCAS had left the plane in such a precarious position that the pilots
did not have the physical strength to manually pull it out of that deep dive.
Now the stick is getting very, very heavy. So the captain says, pull with me, which is basically saying, help me. I've got a lot of weight on this, but I have no trim to do it. I go, okay, manual trim.
And I'm trying, but it's not working.
I can't hold it back.
Unable to control the plane manually, in a last-ditch effort, the Ethiopian pilots decided to turn the electronic stabilizer system back on.
The MCAS fires, and this fire goes and goes. I'm pulling back. A little bit of trip. And now the nose is pointing down, and it's over. Stop the sim. They're headed toward the ground. They turn those switches back on, which is not in a checklist, but welcome to the battlefield. You're staring at the ground, and you don't know what else to do.
Do you ever think about what goes through the mind and the heart of pilots when the plane is going down?
Yes, I don't like to think about that. I think that's everyone's worst nightmare.
It's hard. But they fought. They fought. They did what pilots do. The system let them down. The system let them down.
Unlike with Lion Air, the Ethiopian Air crash has sudden and swift repercussions for Boeing. Ethiopian Air immediately grounds their entire MAX fleet, and like a domino effect, countries around the world start grounding their fleets.
All of us at Boeing are deeply sorry for the loss of life in the Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 and Lion Air Flight 610 accidents.
Boeing was saying that they were working on adding safeguards to MCAS to make a safe airplane even safer.
Would the accident have happened without MCAS, though? Call it a link.
It's a chain of events, right? There is no singular item. It's a chain of events.
But what you came up with in the end was flawed, was it not?
We've designed the MAX to have the flying qualities that were desired in the hands of the pilots. The MCAS system is part of that design effort.
Corporations always see profit, always see brand protection. They will not easily admit their wrongdoing, even where it is very evident. And that was the case with Boeing at that particular time.
346 people died. Can you answer a few questions here about that?
He's sorry that we lost our family members. He doesn't take any accountability for having caused their deaths.
If Boeing thought that Natty and Michael and the other victims' families were going to just quietly go away and not try to hold the company accountable, they could not have been more wrong.
It was amazing to behold these two people from this farm in Western Massachusetts coming down to take on really one of the biggest corporations in the world.
Mr. Stumo, thank you for your presence today.
Boeing killed my daughter. We're not afraid of anybody.
In the fall of 2019, Nadia went back to Ethiopia. After months of digging and searching, workers had actually been able to find some remains from the crash. And Nadia brought back those remains, and they actually included some artifacts.
We got back Samia's business journal, which talks about her plans. We got back her passport. This is a business blouse that she took with her, and it all smells of jet fuel. They fill the room with the smell. I mean, to me, it's a smell of death.
I don't want other mothers and other families to go through this. I don't want them to be trying to hear their daughter's voice and, you know, wonder what you would say to them. So that's why it's important to work on the aviation safety. Because people shouldn't innocently buy an airplane ticket and then be in a flying coffin.
While Nadia and her husband Michael were consumed by grief, they were able to quickly turn their anguish into action against Boeing.
The family of Samia Stumo shares their pain so that others don't feel the same.
Michael and Nadia fly to Chicago and file the first lawsuit against Boeing by an American family.
I want her death not to be in vain. I don't want anybody else to die.
Nadia and Michael, along with more than 100 other families of victims around the world, alleged that Max had a defective design and that Boeing issued inadequate warnings about the plane, something that Boeing denies.
This is going to go down as one of the most callous, deliberate efforts to keep a product in the public domain for the wrong reasons.
What really shocks me is their greed. I don't know how they can still